The deal is done. Now, where are the loopholes?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. President Obama has officially signed the fiscal cliff deal into law, which means, among other things, that jobless benefits will be extended and tax rates will go up for the wealthiest Americans, which is not the same thing as saying the wealthiest Americans will actually pay higher taxes, as Marketplace's Stacey Vanek Smith reports.
There are perhaps three certainties in life: death, taxes, and people trying to get out of paying taxes.
There's an unending drive for tax loopholes.
And higher taxes will increase that drive, says Bill Frenzel, a tax policy expert at the Brookings Institution.
Most of the loopholes have very aggressive lobbying programs.
And not very aggressive regulation, says David K. Johnston, a professor at Syracuse University.
Your chances of being prosecuted are about the same as winning the Mega Millions jackpot. So this encourages people playing games with the tax system.
For companies, new legislation made the loophole situation even worse, says Johnston.
In fact, it added some additional favors.
For things like motor car raceways and green energy, Johnston says tax loopholes for individuals and corporations cost the U.S. government trillions of dollars a year. In New York, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Well, one of the key numbers in the fiscal cliff deal is 400,000. That is, in effect, the new definition of wealthy, because that is the level of income at which tax hikes kick in for individuals. So is that what it means to be rich? Marketplace's Wealth and Poverty Desk asked some people in Southern California to finish the sentence, "You know you're wealthy when?"
You know you're wealthy when your zip code changes.
When there's something that you want, you can go get it and not have to worry about it.
When you don't have to worry about your checks bouncing.
When you can wake up and be happy for what you've accomplished.
Well, you know you're wealthy when you're sure about something. You're either insecure or you're secure.
When you achieve the wealth, you're probably going to want to move.
I think a lot of the super, super wealthy people, they don't appreciate what they have.
I think that's something that has been pushed in America, is to have monetary wealth.
If you're wealthy enough to go out and write a $5,000 check, then that's not just getting by. That's having a little piece of cheese.
If you could choose between having nice things and not having nice things, I would choose to have nice things. But like, if I've got what I need, I'm happy with that.
To me, wealthy isn't necessarily about money. It's more about living simply and then taking pleasure in the small things that you do daily.
Well, how would you finish that sentence, "You know you're wealthy when?" Visit us on Facebook or Twitter at Marketplace APM and let us know. And let's do the numbers. Stocks are mixed in global trading this morning, down 0.3% right now in Frankfurt, up 0.7% in Tokyo. One of the largest cable providers in the U.S., Time Warner Cable, is dropping the liberal news channel Current TV from its lineup. The announcement came shortly after word that Current is being bought by Al Jazeera. On Wall Street yesterday, a big fiscal cliff deal rally sent the Dow up 308 points, 2.3%, to close at 13,412. That was the largest one-day point jump since December of 2011.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Well, now that the fiscal cliff deal has been signed into law, we can start worrying about a debt ceiling fight coming in Washington next month, a spending fight shortly thereafter, and a budget fight right after that. But Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell says there is one bright economic spot to look forward to this year, and it is called the housing market. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Jeremy.
Well, so why would the housing market do well in 2013, even with all this uncertainty in Washington?
Well, you know, you're starting to see increases in prices, and that's feeding a sense that, hey, you know, interest rates are really low, but prices are going up, and I'm noticing that, you know, the sales signs are coming down in my neighborhood. Maybe now finally is the time to make a move. Plus, there seem to be fewer foreclosures in the market. So I think a big part of it is the psychology of the market has changed at the same time that interest rates are really low.
But hasn't the problem always been that people want to buy that house? They see the good deal. They know the interest rate is low, but they can't get a mortgage from the bank.
Well, that's always going to weigh on this recovery to a certain extent. But you know what, Jeremy? The financial obligation ratio. Now, this is a number where you take all your debt payments, right?
Yeah.
And you compare it to your disposable income. And it peaked in 2007. Now, it's back to the level where it was in the early 1980s. So I think we're going to be surprised by how many households are out there that actually have the ability to do some borrowing, and they're more creditworthy. The household balance sheet has been repaired over the past 5 years.
So is the new housing market then going to be different from the old one? Because as we found out so well back in 2007, 2008, the old housing market was not a sustainable one.
Now, I think the underlying trend is going to be more subdued. I mean, there's going to be in 2013 stories about multiple bids and all this excitement about the turn in the market, but the underlying trend will be subdued for two reasons. One, income growth is really slow. People aren't getting wage increases, and they're going to be wary of borrowing too much. They can borrow more, but they don't want to borrow too much.
Right.
And the other reason is we're all recognizing the risk of home ownership. Look, even in a recovery, people are going to be downsized, re-engineered. What euphemism do you want to use, Jeremy? You know, people are going to lose their jobs, and they're going to recognize, I want the flexibility to move to another part of the country. Renting is smart, not throwing your money away.
Marketplace economics correspondent Chris Farrell, thank you as always.
Thanks a lot, Jeremy.
And finally, the website Cue, that's C-U-E, helps people organize their digital lives and has released some interesting user statistics for 2012. Turns out the busiest hour of the week is 11 a.m. Tuesday. It took people an average of 2.5 days to respond to an email last year, which is up from 2.2 days the year before. And the average number of words composed last year was 41,368. That is about the size of the book Lord of the Flies. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.